If just an hour a week in the Wiggle Room isn't enough for you, you could begin the epic journey of 30 seasons with the Evolution of Strategy, where Josh Wiggler and myself go through every single one of Survivor's first 30 seasons in our 30-part audiobook. For more information and to listen to Chapter 1, all about Survivor Borneo completely for free, visit evolutionofstrategy.com. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here for another edition of the Survivor Wiggle Room, where we're going to talk about all of the stories going on here in week 5 of Survivor Go Wrong. And let's bring in the man who knows all in the Wiggle Room. Here is the great Josh Wiggler.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle. How about that?
And the Wiggle Room. The Wiggle Room. It's kind of like your high school prom. You don't know what you're going to get, but you're going to feel something.
Yeah. Boy, I could do a whole podcast about all the things that emotions I felt at the high school prom.
But was your prom? What was your prom experience like? Do you have a good prom story?
No, or is it bad, not a lousy prom story. The 22nd version is, I think a girl went with me who was like super reluctant. Like it was sort of like, I figured out like, oh, okay, I don't think this girl has anybody good to go with. So right. I'm going to ask her. And then she sort of like reluctantly said yes, because she realized that, you know, she wanted to go to the prom, but she didn't have anybody else to go with, because like everybody else, like all the musical chairs had been sort of taken. And it was sort of like, I saw that like, there was sort of like this inefficiency in the marketplace. I was like, okay, I can move in. Like, I don't think she has anybody else to go with. Okay. And so she said yes, but then she just got like super completely wasted beyond, like, I don't know if it was like to cope with that she was going to the prom with me, or if she just had an issue. She was like, so I just remember like just standing around while she was like off, like puking a different place.
You were stone cold sober.
I wasn't, you know, come on, look,
Soberish, closer to sober than she was.
Right. Yeah. And this girl just like completely, just to cope with going to the prom with me, just like completely, like, I thought she had to go to the hospital and get her stomach pumped. It was
disaster. That would have been, yeah. Medevac from the prom.
Right. Right. Yeah. She wanted nothing to do with me.
Three people down at once at the prom.
Yeah.
Unprecedented. No, I feel like that would be, precedented.
Yeah.
Many medevacs from the prom.
All right. Well, we got off on a sour note.
My prom was pretty boring, except that my group of friends and I, this might come as a little bit of a shock, Rob, but we were more of the nerdier crowd in high school. But some of our friends were nominated for prom king, for the prom court.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three of our friends were nominated, and we all decided, including two of the three friends who were nominated, we were going to pool all of our resources behind one of the friends. And so we got everybody in our grade, everybody that we possibly could, that we were like loosely friends with, to vote for this man who is still a good friend of mine today. And we made him the prom king, and it was the best night ever.
Wow.
Yeah. It was great.
Wow.
So we beat the system. We gamed the system.
You just like lived vicariously through your friend who became the prom king?
Yeah. We were all the king that night.
Wow.
He was the figurehead, which is a good position to be in, because they'll come after him before they come after any of us. But we were all able to celebrate the victory, share in the win. Yeah, it was good. Really good. We split the prize.
Did not plan on doing 5 minutes on prom stories. Thank you, Peter, for taking us down that path.
Yeah, but thank you, Peter, I guess. But wow, what a weird comment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To compare tribal council to high school prom because you don't know what you're going to get, but you'll feel something. That's alarming. That's an alarming comment.
I feel like Peter has a lot of these lines at the ready.
Regrettable lines at the ready. Yeah.
Okay. Josh, I know you were also back from a West Coast swing last week. We were talking to you while you were you were still in San Francisco last week?
I was on the coast. I was in Cambria, California, on my way down towards Los Angeles. You and I met up. We got some sugarfish. It was delightful.
Turned out to be a nice time, yeah.
Yeah, my first of two sugar fishes of the trip. My first of two dinners of the night.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, that is sushi.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sugar fish is also the name of sugar and fish back when you're shipping them.
Yeah.
as many people do.
Yeah, when the people sometime around 2009, people that were shipping that were hoping for Sugarfish. Yeah, it was it was Atsuji level sushi dining.
It was not quite Atsuji. You know, I still think I would rather dine at Jonas.
Yeah,
named after the man himself, but it was still pretty good.
So here we are after an exciting week of Survivor, where we had the tribe swap. Very, very fun to talk through on all the different podcasts that we did this past week. And now very much looking forward to digging in here with you, much like we did with that sushi, and getting into what's going on here as we head into our post swap episode, which I feel like that the post for like the typical tribe swap, usually we have two episodes after a swap typically. And one is really about how somebody who is in a pretty good position ends up in another tribe and they sort of got screwed. And then the second one, I feel like, often is a less interesting vote. I feel like it's always somebody who is...
like the Alexis Maxwells of the world.
Right, somebody that's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, they're probably going to be a factor after the merge, so why don't we either throw the challenge, or why don't we, you know, probably just vote this person off because of who they know on the other side.
Yeah, I think it's a less interesting episode because there is typically a fall from grace or a fall from beauty in the case of Anna Kate, who really was in a great spot in this game. You know, we were talking a lot last week about, you know, what kind of tug of war might exist for the three bronze in whatever swap comes up. And I put my money down on the beauty side being able to hold this thing together, and I got that wrong. I mean, I think it's hard to predict how these tribe swaps are going to shake out in terms of who's going to go where. Sometimes it's not super hard to predict because the previews will basically tell you who is on which tribe. That was not the case this season, which I thought was fantastic. So going into Wednesday night, it was a completely blind situation. But it just goes to show how fast a swap can really derail your game. So I think the thing that happened with Anna, that was really interesting. There was some interesting stuff in terms of Ty with the idol. Does he want to play it? Does he not? Should we go after Ty? Should we go after Anna? The Julia factor is a big one. So there was a lot of complicated things up in the air for this episode. But I think that there's still some complicated stuff for next week.
So going into the tribe swap and the way that they ultimately ended up doing it, did you like the mechanics around how they said, okay, one person is going to get this red buff and they're going to go off on their own tribe? Because I feel like that there's been times in Survivor history where they don't necessarily mind an uneven swap.
Right. Yeah, but I liked that it was a reaction to the story as it was unfolding out there. It was an unprecedented thing to have three different contestants going down at the challenge at the same time. One of them gets evacuated. They were planning on doing this thing at 14. Now they have to do it at 13. And it's a spontaneous twist. It's a reactionary twist. It's a twist in the moment. But I like it. I think that I thought that it added an interesting level of strategy for these people to think about how are we going to vote somebody out if we have this extra person who's going to be coming back into the game. It definitely puts the beauty tribe in a screwy situation when it's a sticky situation as well. When it's Julia who is, you know, going off to the bronze tribe all on her own, you kind of just have to assume that one of Ty, Anna, Nick, or Michelle is going to get screwed over by that. It just makes a lot of sense that that's the way it's going to go. But that's because Julia drew that red buff. I mean, if Sydney draws that red buff, do you think that a bronze is necessarily going? I don't think so. So I think it's luck of the draw for people who think that it was unfair. It definitely sucks for Anna Kate, but I don't think that it's particularly unfair. And I think that it was a cool way of reacting to the fact that Caleb is no longer in the game. No one anticipated someone leaving the way that he left. And this is just a cool way of reacting to those circumstances and setting up a great Bruce Kennegai callback here by stranding somebody off into exile to come back into a tribe at a later date.
I do have to issue a retraction. I had said during the know-it-alls that I was really worked up about this, about how I felt like that it was a classic goof on the part of Terry and the Lamina tribe to not throw the challenge and bring Bruce into the fold at Lamina. And what I had said was that it turned out that Kasaya was able to vote out the useless Ruth Marie.
How dare you?
And then bring in Bruce. And I actually misspoke there. I should have said the useless Melinda.
How dare you? First off, how dare you call her useless? Never forget, Melinda was she was a talented singer. In an alternate Tio's timeline, she is the Wanda of the piece.
You know, the problem
is... What was the point of doing the evolution of strategy if you can't even remember that Melinda went second?
Look, it was spur of the moment. It was spur of the moment.
I get it. I'm impressed that you still even remembered the name Ruth Marie.
Yeah, no, Ruth Marie, I feel like, was the better character of the two. And Ruth Marie actually was not useless.
I guess.
Yeah, I guess. But you know what? The problem is also there that you had so many people that like sucked up the airtime between Shane and all these other big characters in that season, and Ceree giving so many confessionals that I think that it came. There was some other people you really didn't feel like you got to know as well. So
no, for sure. And I think that back then in, you know, we're talking about Panama when the four tribes get condensed into two and one person is going to be stranded on exile, and that ends up being Bruce, and he does this great hang 10 to Jeff Probst and the whole cast as he's being carted away. Unlike Julia, who was seemingly kind of terrified to go off to Toh Tang Beach all by herself, Bruce could not wait. He's like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. Neat. Cool.
Yeah.
And he gets to go into exile, and Lamina probably does screw up greatly by not throwing a challenge and bringing Bruce to their side. I think it's a very different season if they do that. From your perspective, either Chanlo or Gondal, should either of those tribes been thinking about throwing intentionally in order to get Julia, or do you see it as a completely different situation?
No, it's a different situation here entirely, but because where, like we said in the evolution of strategy and on the know-it-alls the other night, for Terry and Dan, bringing in Bruce would have been an asset, like because he was, one, going to be somebody who was better in the challenges than whoever they were going to get rid of, and then also they knew him from the older guys camp, whereas Beauty didn't have a base of power. So if we ended up with one of the tribes where, say, hypothetically, there were three or even four of the Beauties on one tribe, where they could potentially throw a challenge and say, okay, let's bring our fourth Beauty in here and get rid of one of the Brains or one of the Brawn. But the way that they were spread out across the tribes, we ended up with that there was no Beauty majority anywhere to be found. So it's easy to sort of pile on and say, okay, really, we'll get a Beauty out of the game and then replace them with another Beauty. So they were able to attack their numbers, and they just didn't have a base of power to work from.
Yeah, that said, I think it does behoove Gondal to lose this challenge, as they do. I don't think they lost it intentionally. I think that Neil and Debbie cleaned up at that puzzle, and I think there was just no way that they were going to top those guys. But I think that it behooves Gondal when you have Aubrey, Peter, and Joe from the Brains in the numbers majority. They can take out someone like Anna. They can bring Julia in for the next week, and then it's up to them whether they want to do that again. You know, they're the people who can really dictate whether or not we want to chip away at the Beauties, or do we want to do something a little different, which maybe I would encourage for next week, but at least they're in control of the decision if they lose this immunity, if they lose Anna, Kate, or Ty, if that was the way that they wanted to go, and they get to control whether or not they get rid of another Beauty next. I think that that's the move for these people.
So do you think that coming into this week for Gondal is the right move for them to throw the challenge this week, undoubtedly, because they all would be on a number of different levels. One, they could take away another Beauty. Whether it's Ty, whether it's Julia, whatever they want to do there. Also, they would be then protecting the probably much more unsure 2-2-2 vote. Who knows how that's going to go?
The 2v2v2.
Right. If they wanted to protect Neil and Debbie over there on Chanlo, they can make sure that there's no chance that those guys end up going home, because they would be then sending somebody to tribal council. It seems to me on paper that this is definitely the play for them this week.
If I'm Aubrey, who seems to be the most strategically sound player on that tribe, I think I would definitely be thinking that. I would be going to Joe and I would say, let's throw this week. We do not want to win this week. We want to control our fate here. Debbie and Neil are over there. Who knows what the politics are there? From where we saw, it seemed like Neil and Debbie are in a decent spot, but that Jason and Sydney are the kingmakers and they get to choose. And you just don't want to put that decision in their hands, especially if Joe and Aubrey are as tight with Neil and Debbie as they were during the Liz Markham vote. Whether or not that means that they should get rid of a Beauty here, I don't necessarily know if that's the case. I think that they could do some other stuff. But I think that Aubrey, it behooves Aubrey to be in the driver's seat to protect Debbie and Neil, and also to kind of control the flow of who is still left in this game as we're starting to drive towards that merge. So I'd be really surprised if Gondal has any say in it, if Aubrey has any say in it, if Joe has any say in it. Even Peter would probably be down with this. I think that Gondal ought to lose this next challenge.
So hypothetically speaking, Josh, let's say that ends up happening and we end up losing. Who do you want to throw out there, Julia or Ty?
You want to just say that wholesale? It's a beauty for sure. Okay. It's probably Julia because she's new person on the block.
All right, so let's just play this out. So, okay, Julia goes out, and then you would imagine that the following week we'd have a merge where we end up with six people from Chanlo coming in, and then five people remaining who were from Gondol. Do you see it being a straight shot where eventually the Brains tribe would be able to pagong their way through this? Do you think that we are potentially on the precipice of maybe a boring post-merge game here in the season?
I don't think it's impossible. I think that that's certainly in the cards. And if that's the case, it's a good thing that these people are interesting. It's a good thing that these people are entertaining and that we have people like Debbie out there and we have characters like Ty, because that's the only thing that would save a straight pagonging is just the fact that we would have dynamic characters along the way. I don't think that that would, I don't know. It's hard to see that being the direction of the season. But that's also why I'd be cautious to keep the Brains intact the way that they currently are going into the merge. If I'm Aubrey and Joe, I'm thinking this coming week is the time to cut Peter loose. I think that you want to shave a number off of the Brains so that the Brains aren't such an easily identifiable numbers threat. I think that if you even the Brains numbers with the Beauties numbers, it's not such an obvious thing that the Brains are the people that you want to go after. But I think if there's five Brains in the game at the merge, I think everybody else would be very foolish not to start targeting them wholesale. But I think if you were to go into the merge with, I guess it would be four Beauties and four Brains and three Brawn, I think things are a lot more up in the air. And Peter, to me, is a really unstable element. Peter is the guy who has expressed to us in confessional, if not to the people out there, that he's ready to flip when he has the right chance to do it. So Aubrey has expressed that she does not trust Peter. Joe has said, or according to Anna in my exit interview with her, Joe said to her, Peter's first to go when we have a shot. So there's no love lost between these people and Peter. So if I'm Gondol, I'm throwing the challenge this week and I'm getting rid of Dr. Obama. And I think that that's the move. And I think that that's the best way to protect the Brains going into a merge.
I'm actually surprised to hear you say that, because I feel like that's a pretty aggressive play for you want Aubrey and Joe to take out one of their own going into the merge, because then that would make them to seem like they're less of a threat coming into the merge. And I think there is some wisdom in that, in terms of, as Steven said during the know-it-alls, you know, the greatest strength is a perceived weakness. So why not go in with less numbers into a merge? But I do think that that would be a very unconventional method of going into the Survivor merge, of trying to go in with less numbers. That's almost like the intentional Matt Singh, I think, is rubbing off to other tribes of like, hey, let's get rid of one of our own people here because we don't want to come in with too many numbers. People will come after us.
Well, I think that it accomplishes a few things. One is you can't trust Peter. Peter's looking to make a move. He's schemy. They've thought about this for a long time about Peter, that Peter is somebody who is just really game body and, a game bot that you can't trust. I mean, just think about his prom night. You can't trust that guy. So I think that, getting rid of him here, I think it solves that problem of trust. They know him. You know, they're talking about the devils that they know and the devils that they don't. They know this devil decently well. And the other piece is they're starting to get to know some of these other devils. They're starting to get to know Scott. They're going to have a chance to get to know Julia. They know Ty. If they can, have decent relationships with Scott and Ty, where is Ty Trang going? Where is Scott Pollard going? If you're having some faith in Debbie and Neil's ability to at least maintain decent relationships with Kyle, Jason, and Sydney on the other tribe, or possibly even Nick and Michelle, if you're trusting Debbie and Neil's ability to have solid contacts on that other tribe, you might be able to rally your forces here at Gondol. You buy some goodwill with Scott and Julia and Ty potentially by saying, we kept you because we trust you. We like you. This has been a great thing that we're building here. Let's go into the merge strong and let's pull some of our closest people over there onto our side. And then you can make some sort of ambush with the two Brains that you've got there if that's the way you want to go. I think it just buys them more options to get rid of Peter here than to keep Peter.
Yeah, I think that for Peter, I think that if he was going to be schemy and somebody who was couldn't wait to flip to the other side, I think he would have done that this week. And it seemed like that he didn't have any desire to try to work with Anna and with Ty. He was pretty much through and through with the Brains, even after Joe and Aubrey said, okay, we're, let the adults have this conversation. Right. And he was just like, yeah, we're voting off one of you guys tonight. So that's the way it's going to be. And he seemed like he was really dug in that he was going to vote off one of the Beauties. So I don't know where Peter or ultimately would go or have any other option. So I think that it would be a mistake to get rid of him at this point in time. And I think you play into the Braun tribe's hands by the Brains weakening themselves, that I have been saying that I feel like that the move for Braun here this week, if we end up with Gondal going to tribal council, I think that maybe Jason and Sydney should side with Nick and Michelle and out one of the Brains here so that you weaken the Brains. So it's a potential 4v4 Brains versus Beauty going into the merge. And I've been calling this the Littlefinger strategy, where you sort of want to keep the two warring factions going and stay in the middle. It's something very similar is happening on Big Brother Canada 4 this season, if you want to get in on that.
Don't
as well.
Bring Big Brother into the wiggle room. Get it out.
But I think that if you're Jason and Scott and Sydney, the best thing in the world would be if a Brains member was voted out this week.
I completely agree. I totally am into that. And I think that if Chan Lo goes to tribal council, I do think it makes sense for Jason and Sydney to go with Nick and to go with Michelle and to weaken the Brains. That's exactly why I think that if Gondal were to go, that I think it's smart for them to get rid of someone like Peter, who, you know, we are seeing that Peter does not want to make that move yet, that he was not interested in working with Ty or Anna. But he has shown trust issues with these people, and we see from Aubrey that she does not trust Peter, that she does not care for Peter. So that's her read on him right now. If they are to go into a merge situation, let's say that Gondal went to tribal council and they just played it smoothly, they just played it normally, and they got rid of Julia, then I would be really flabbergasted if the three remaining Brawns and the three remaining Beauties in the game didn't team up and go against the five Brains and just pick them off right down the line. Which is why if Gondal goes and they show that the tribe loyalty are a little bit more flexible than that, maybe that changes some thinking, and maybe your thinking isn't automatically there's this gigantic Brains block that we have to be deeply concerned about. It shows that the social lines in the game are a little bit more flexible. I think that if that's the way that it played, I think that there's a little bit more of a hope for the Brains to not just be seen as this monster target, that their frontal lobes are just too big to ignore. That's my take on it anyway.
All right, well, this will be fun to see exactly how this is going to play out and all the strategy that's going into this. Let's talk about some of the characters that we got to see more of and finally got to see a little bit of their story, where they were a little bit more in the background through four episodes. And Josh, let's start off and talk about Julia, who was somebody who really AJ Mass had her as the ninja in his archetypes this week. The one person, if you were going to name all the characters on the show, she'd be the one person that you would struggle to remember her name. She got some airtime this week. What did you think of the plight of Julia, who we find out that is telling people she's older? She's actually just 19. She's out there on Exile Island by herself, almost kind of like what Exile Island performance would you relate that to?
Oh my God. Do you have one in mind that I need to get, or
Coach Final Five in Token Sheens? Is it almost
that is a reach. That is a reach. That is a legendary Exile. Like, that was the Exile that they had that was so strong that they had to retire Exile Island for 10 years.
I'm not saying that it was an epic moment, but to somebody who is really struggling out there.
I do think of like when Fishback was sprawled out there in Token Jeans and he was just like lying in that ravine covered in the dirty water, just looking dead, like a dead fish.
And then he came back and chose to eat pizza rather than compete in the challenge, right?
Yeah, the wettest, soggiest pizza of all time. Yeah, your Survivor pizza aficionado has declared that the worst pizza in Survivor history. That's funny. I like that. I think that there's something there. Speaking of the AJ Mass archetypes, talk about a season that's going wrong. The diplomat is immediately assassinated as soon as those archetypes are established.
Yeah, she was number one on the AJ board. She was my pick. She was my first round draft pick in the draft I did with AJ Mass. So really, that sort of threw everything out of whack here with this season.
Yeah, so this season is little fingering you.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds interesting. I think the Julia thing was, you know, that I thought it was a good story. Not, you know, besides the fact that it was just a good twist, I really liked the twist. I thought it was a good story. It was a good scene. You know, we do love to see those classic Survivor fans love to see these classic Survivor moments of people just struggling to exist out there. We've been reminded very much already this season that Survivor is a difficult game that beats the crap out of of you. In a very unpleasant way, we found this out back in episode 4. Episode 5 with Julia stranded on Exile to me felt more like a vintage, struggling through the day type of thing. As far as exiles go, that was a pretty plush exile. You know, it's not the Sugar Shack, but she does have her own shelter. She's got tools that she can use. So people have been through worse exile situations in the past, I think. But it was a compelling story for an 18-year-old girl who has not told anyone that she is 18, other than apparently Anna, according to Anna. Mm-hmm. You know, for her to be suffering through this situation all on her own, it definitely woke her up on the show. We had not been hearing too much from Julia yet. Still need to know more to really consider her somebody who can make a huge impact on the game. But Julia is finally, you know, she's one of the characters this week. There were a few people this week that had been almost non-existent up until this week, and she's one of those characters that broke out. So I was happy to see that.
Do you think that this is the beginning of a story which could go deep into the game, or do you feel like that this is maybe a 2-week story if she is? Because I think that she would be the chalk pick most likely to go out this week.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you're the Gordon Holmes and Shireen Oskui power rankings are not out there yet, but I would imagine that they're both going to have them pretty low, have Julia pretty low. And I think that that's the way that you should do it. I think that it could go that way. I think it's very easy to see that maybe they're just setting her up right now to have a 2-episode arc and then she's gone, because she does seem on paper to be the easy vote. We just voted out a beauty woman already. Why not just do it again? We have Ty on our side. We trust Ty. Maybe at least Ty is a good provider and everyone on that tribe seems to really like him. So Julia could just be the easy pick. I feel like she's not the person to send home. I've already outlined why I think that it makes more sense to vote somebody else out. But I think that you could see it very easily. I think if you were just doing power rankings, Julia should be pretty close to the bottom of your list.
One of the other stories I think is really interesting to follow, because I don't know how it's going to go. We had the beginning of this new bromance between Ty and Scott. And maybe that...
Talk about damage control for your reputation. Like, if you've just been, like, murdered and killed by social media in America, by me as well, I will add, to align yourself with the fan favorite of the season, by far the fan favorite. Some pretty good image rehab for Scott Powers.
It's a really solid move. It's almost like if you were some sort of, like, toxic political candidate, and it's like, oh, boy, I gotta change my image real quick.
Right.
Here's my new vice president, Ty. And like, oh, okay, well, we like Ty a lot. So
you're at least thinking about it. You're thinking about it.
Okay. I guess we're back in.
Yeah. I compared them to Colossus and Wolverine from the X-Men, because Colossus and Wolverine have a classic move. In the comics, Wolverine is much shorter than he is in the movies. Hugh Jackman is a much taller Wolverine than what Wolverine is traditionally depicted as in the books. But they have this awesome move where Colossus, who's the giant steel-covered Russian bodybuilder, picks up Wolverine and throws him in the air at large objects like the Sentinels, the mutant-hunting Sentinels, and it's called the Fastball Special. That is kind of what I thought was happening when Scott tossed Ty Trang into a tree.
Yeah. And I compared them to the Bran and Hodor of Survivor. Yes.
Yeah, Ty seems to have warped into Scott.
He likes to climb too.
Yeah. He likes to climb. Yeah. Hopefully he doesn't fall. That would be bad. That would be very bad. I think that's been a concern of ours from the beginning. Don't fall out of those trees. Yeah. But he, you know, he has seemingly warped into Scott, where Scott is a more affable guy. Maybe when Alicia's not around, I don't know, maybe it's the change of scenery, or maybe it's just the intentional image rehab that's going on. But Scott was a nicer man this week, for sure.
Yeah. So where do you think that bromance goes? I mean, in a couple of weeks, do we forget about the Ty and Caleb bromance? Is that possible?
I don't know if that's possible. I think Survivor wants us to remember that forever.
Okay.
So whether we remember that this season or not, I feel like we'll remember that in the future. I feel like that's just something that Survivor will reawaken at some point. But the Ty and Scott romance, their bromance is interesting. And Scott is, you know, Scott is at the center of one of the most intriguing stories of the season, the idol. He's the guy who knows where two of the idols in the game are. He doesn't know where every idol in the game is, but he knows where two of them are. He knows that his buddy Jason has one, and his new BFF, Ty Trang, my BFF as well, has one. And he is the only one of the two people on Gondol right now that knows what happens when you connect two idols. To our knowledge, we did not see Scott share that information with Ty Trang. Jason would know that. If Jason finds out from Scott that Ty has an idol, Jason would know the true power of the idol and would know how to handle that. But Ty doesn't know that there's somebody on Braun that has an idol that he can connect with. But we've been wondering, like, how do you get that twist out into the open? How do you get Ty and Jason together? They seem like such opposites. How are you going to have those two people have the conversation that we both have an idol? Let's team up. Let's use it together. It seems like Scott Pollard could be the linchpin between these two people, and that suddenly makes him a very, very critical, pivotal character in this story, which is not something that I was expecting coming into this week at all.
I know it sounds like a couple of weeks ago we were talking about, like, I don't see any scenario where they end up getting together, but if we play this out and Julia is the person who ends up going home, I mean, is Ty really going to stick around with Nick and Michelle, who he really has seems like he has no bond whatsoever? Or at the point, like, if Scott tells Ty about this possibility of what they could do with Jason, if he sets up the menage a trang and they go ahead and potentially, like, hey, the three of us, we work together, you know, we could have this super idol because he has one and you have one and we work together. That seems like something that could actually have some legs going forward.
Yeah. Well, Scott's got big legs.
Yes.
A menage a Ty. I like that. A menage a Ty trang.
I said menage a trang.
I like that. I think that's good. I feel like I hear that. I definitely do. I could see, you know, especially if Ty really likes Scott, if he trusts Scott and Scott was the guy who advised him, don't use your idol. You're not going home this week. Hang on to that thing. And it paid off. So he just bought some goodwill with Ty. I could see Scott pulling Ty towards the Braun. You say that Ty would have nothing going with Nick and Michelle, but doesn't that make it very easy to see that Scott, Kyle, Jason, and Sydney would team up with the three remaining beauties in that scenario? Why wouldn't Nick and Michelle come along for that ride? So I think that that becomes the very natural alliance that you could see happening, and that's the disaster scenario for the Brains.
Okay, so then Ty is like the conduit to Nick and Michelle post merge. That those guys.
Well, I guess. Yeah, but also Jason is flirting with Nick and Michelle. He's fielding that offer.
So yeah, that actually would make a lot of sense then on a number of different levels, and I think that speaks all the more to why it would be a very bad move for Joe and Aubrey to get rid of Peter, because he's a number on their side right now, and in this super negative scenario for them, this is where everybody else is going the opposite direction against them already.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a reason to go that way. I think they also just don't know about that relationship between Scott and Ty. They don't have that information on the table. And we also know that Joe doesn't think there are idols in the game, which was like, that felt to me like an SNL sketch when he was saying that. Like, that felt like Celebrity Jeopardy, where he was just like giving like the most like unbelievably intentionally stupid answer to a question of, I don't think there's idols in the game. I don't believe that there's any out there. It just felt like a Will Ferrell character.
But are you being unfair to Joe there? Because Ty, who has an idol, is saying the same exact thing. How do you know Joe's not being coy there?
I guess maybe he's being coy. Should I give him more respect? I probably should.
I think we should. I think that we have to give people the benefit of the doubt in these tribal councils.
I thought it was unbelievable in the moment.
Because I know that everything is presented to us at these tribal councils like people are being always authentic. But we do know that tribal council is a poker game. And a lot of times people are saying things that aren't what they're actually believing.
What does it say that the one poker player in the game couldn't survive one tribal council?
Well, Survivor is a lot more complicated than poker.
Yeah, no, I think that there, you know, you could give him some credit there,
and that's a thing that with when we do these exit interviews that we can ask Joe, like, did you really think that at this point in time that there were no idols? Or I mean, he is somebody who's like an FBI investigator and stuff like that.
Right.
I do feel like that we should probably give him at least, you know, 50-50 that maybe he was just trying to, you know, put a shine on everybody.
Just the way it was presented in the moment. It's like, come on, that's absurd. That is actually ridiculous.
It's pretty absurd. Who knows?
Pretty absurd. But, you know, this is what they're thinking about idols. Maybe. I just don't think that they have any reason necessarily to think that Ty has an idol. Scott knows about the idol. Kyle Jason has an idol. I don't think that those ingredients are part of their decision making right now. Maybe they ought to be. Maybe you just need to be planning about those scenarios anyway. But I think if you're not considering those things, these things that they just couldn't possibly know about, I think that it's still worth considering, at the very least considering and heavily considering putting Peter on the block.
Now, on top of everything that's going on here, potentially we have the menage a trang. And then you also have if Jason is picking up Nick and Michelle. The one person who seems like sort of in the middle of all this would be Sydney, who got some airtime and got to talk about herself in a way.
Girl, that we, yes.
Yeah, we didn't get to see her talk about herself previous to that. So
it was like the show itself was responding to these people who are like, watch Sydney. Like, Sydney's pretty good. Like, she's being very quiet right now, but she's pretty good. And we got some really great airtime where Sydney's not only being the one saying, I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very smart. I might not look it. I might look like, you know, just a jock, but I'm actually pretty smart. And we have Debbie, you know, another player in the game reflecting that same thought line. So yeah, good week for Sydney for sure.
So good week for her, but do you think that this is the beginning of potential winner edit for her? Do you think that she's somebody who could be a forgotten person and maybe a candidate to flip away from her group if we end up with all these other beauties coming on board with Jason and Scott?
It's hard to see why Sydney would flip on Jason and Scott right now. I don't see the scenario. I think maybe it could present itself later on. Right now, it seems really unlikely that she would waver away from those three. Of those three, of Kyle, Jason, Scott, Pollard, and Sydney, if those three stay super, super tight and they can bulldoze their way to the top of the game, Sydney's the person that I would put my money on to win, for sure. She seems the most likable. She seems the most level-headed. She's not a drama magnet. She was not the person who was at the heart of the controversy with Alicia Holden and everything. In fact, Alicia says, good luck, Sydney, right before she goes. We have people like Debbie who are really shining on Sydney and saying, you're great, we love you. I feel like Sydney, of the three of those, would be the person that I'd put money on easily. But in terms of her flipping away, I have a hard time seeing it. It makes so much sense for her to stick with these guys right now.
So what is the upside scenario for her in this menage a trois? Is that these guys are going to end up taking all of the bullets and she's somebody who could be left standing there at the end?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that unless it's the kind of thing where it's like, go after the person that's the least likely person to be going, you know, to be gone after, like target the person who, you know, is not the obvious person to target right now. That's the scenario where someone like her goes, you know, when you're clipping artists because it's too obvious to go after Pete Yurkowski or something like that. I feel like that's really the only scenario. If she is sticking behind Kyle and Scott, I feel like Kyle and Scott, at least for the early portions of the merge, would be the bigger targets every day of the week.
I agree. I think that she's set up particularly well here moving forward. What would be the biggest thing she needs to worry about if you were really concerned about Sydney? Do you see any sort of warning sign for her anywhere?
Not at the moment. I mean, I think that she's safe to the merge. You know, really the biggest thing that she has to figure out is with Kyle, which way are we going? Are we going, you know, if we do go to tribal council coming up, are we hanging with the two brains that are here? Or are we hanging with the two beauties? That's the big decision that needs to be made. I can't see the two brains and the two beauties deciding let's clip one of the brawn. That, you know, something that has not even been hinted at on the show yet would have to happen in order for that to be the case. There was no setup for that at all this week. The drama at Chanlo is that the Bronze have a decision to make. These two Bronze have a decision to make. That's really it for Sydney in terms of things to be worried about right now. It would just be, how are the numbers shaking out at the merge? Like, how did we determine? Like, did we give the brains a numbers advantage? Did we even the playing field? And now which way are we going after? But I don't think she's got any imminent danger coming her way.
I agree. I think it's a particularly rosy forecast for Sydney. For Storm, I don't see
clear skies.
Yeah, clear skies ahead. Now, for her going into the merge, where we're going to start to get into individual immunities, I think that this is also an interesting thing to factor in. Do you think that she should go full tilt at the immunities in the post-merge game, or do you think that she should take her foot off the gas? Bear in mind, this season is filmed before Second Chance, so right. This is filmed even before Joey Amazing really started to get on a run, before Mike Holloway won a bunch of immunities. So the idea of somebody running the table is foreign to these people, that they haven't seen somebody go on a big immunity run outside of like the classic Survivor instances of that. But it's not something that should be probably top of mind for these people.
Depends on how long their memories are. Mm-hmm. I think that that's really what it comes down to. I think that, you know, Sydney, she's perceived as a super strong person. We get that from Debbie. She's saying like, you're super ripped, you're super cut. And somebody like that, somebody who has the body that you have, has to be really smart as well, because it requires a crazy amount of discipline to do what you do. So already one person is accurately calling Sydney for her capabilities. Like, she knows. She gets Sydney. Whether or not everybody else is looking at her that way, who knows? We're not getting those reads from anybody else. But we do... I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot of strong people in this game. You know, you've got somebody like Nick, who would be potentially perceived as an immunity threat, or Jason, who is a brawler, and Scott, who is super tall. And there's other people in this game that maybe you want to let have that attention. If Sydney drew that attention to herself too early on, I think that that's probably where I'm starting to get a little bit nervous. Maybe people are starting to pick up, well, not only is she, you know, got a good social game and she's in a good position in the game and she seems pretty smart, but also she's really rad in these challenges. That might be a reason to get a little nervous about keeping Sydney around. So I don't see any reason why she should feel like she would desperately need immunity if she were to get into the merge and if she were able to go for a little while with a fairly tight alliance. If her numbers at the top of the merge were to get attacked and she were to be in a bad position, and if she had it in her to step on the gas, I see no reason why not at that point. But early on, at least, I think maybe to shy away from it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
Josh, let's start to do some rapid fire. Let's bounce around and talk about some people that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about over these first couple of weeks. Who are some other people that really caught your eye this week on Survivor?
Big week for Neil. Huge week for Neil. It was an ice cream party. Ice cream party on Survivor Koh Rang this week.
Found the idol.
He found the idol this week. It was sort of a strange idol hunt. What we saw at the start of the episode, just the way he narrated it was so soft and velvety. It was very
soft,
very,
serve.
Yeah, soft serve idol hunt. Yeah, for sure. He said some strange stuff. He said, like, it's like this tree. I'm looking for unique trees. This one has a long, thin slit.
Yeah.
It's like, yikes.
You know, I did not pull that clip. I had that ready to go. And I said, you know what? That's too much.
It's far. It's a little far. It's like, and then you just push that tool through, right through the bottom.
Yeah.
It's just very little shades of Uncle Larry. So definitely things like that
too
going
much.
On. Yeah, a little far. But, you know, he also gets a funny zinger at the tribe swap where he's saying, you know, I think we got a lot of strength. We got some looks. We've got some smarts. It's a well-rounded tribe. And mostly I'm talking about myself, Jeff. So he had a good zinger in there. Neil was starting to come out of his shell a little bit more. Neil had been a pretty quiet guy. Neil was at the target of Dr. Pete and Liz back in episode 3, that they were looking at him as the person who was schemey and a bit of a scoundrel and someone you want to take out now before you let him get too far. I'm sure that their read on him was accurate. I fully believe that that's the kind of guy that Neil is. Neil is not the kind of guy that's just going to play a game where he's not willing to roll up his sleeves and get a little dirty, get a little covered in some of that soft serve ice cream. I feel like we hadn't seen any of that. You know, that in that episode, in episode 3, it really kind of came out of nowhere that was their plan. And it kind of made you think, well, probably Neil is okay for right now. But now Neil is starting to become a bit more of a character on the show. He's packing heat. He's got an idol in his ice cream pants pocket, and who knows how that gun is going to go off. But that is something that we haven't talked about at all in the wiggle room this week, at least yet. And that is a big ingredient in the mix here that we need to be thinking about.
Do you think there's any possibility that Neil and Jason could connect the dots and realize that they have the ability to lock idols together?
100%, you know, if Admiral Debbie is able to seal the deal with this alliance and bring Jason and Sydney over to her and Neil, if she's able to solidify those things and open up the bomb doors and let them inside the ship, I think that you could see Neil and Jason sharing that information. I think that you could see the two of them figuring that out. I think the story right now wants us to believe that Scott will somehow tether Ty and Jason together, but there is the option that, you know, this alliance is growing possibly between Neil and Jason and the other two brains and brawn in the mix in that equation, and you could see how that could happen. You could see how you would get like that classic serve of vanilla and chocolate in the same cone, and we would be able to have a big super idol out of that.
Okay. Yeah. Jason could be in an interesting spot here of having to pick whose idol does he want to work with.
Jason's in a good spot. He is. You know, he's not going anywhere imminently, at least this week. I would really be surprised. I think that he's going to have this choice. You know, he has to know about Neil's thing first. He has to know about Neil's idol. But if he finds out about that, yeah, he's got his pick.
Josh, Who else caught your eye this week?
Nick spoke. Nick has always caught my eye. This is no secret.
Wow.
But Nick spoke. He was, you know, Purple Nick. He has a voice. We haven't heard from Nick since, I think we really hadn't heard from him since the first episode or so. And he's making moves. He's the guy who's trying to make some moves. He's trying to get him and Michelle in good with Jason and Sydney. Who knows if that's going to work, but he's at least being established as the architect of that alliance if that's to go forward. Michelle came off as really panicky this week, which was not a great look, and she was my winner pick going into the season. I'm not feeling fantastic about that. I understand why she would be feeling panicky, because had Chan Lo lost that challenge, I think that she is the odds-on favorite to go home. So, it was going to be Anna or Michelle this week, I think. But it's not a great look for Michelle, a better look for Nick this week, and especially a good look for Nick this week after he hadn't had any looks at all over the past couple of weeks.
So you're saying a good look for Nick. So in terms of his story, do you feel like, is this the beginning of a new chapter for Nick, where maybe he's able to move on here from the swap and start to make some noise, where it looked as though he was potentially going to be that first person out of beauty? Or do you think that it was more airtime for him, but really the beginning of the end, which comes this week?
I don't know if it's the beginning of the end that comes this week. I think that he's a person on the board. He should be low on the power rankings of somebody who could go home this week. I feel like that's definitely in the cards. If the Brains and the Brawn are to team up on this tribe, I could see them going after Nick, especially as we're presumably heading into Emerge pretty soon. I think that it could also be the start of a new story, but he's not the main character of that story. I think that he was way too invisible for the first part of this season to be the main character of any story that's coming up. I think he could be a supporting player. I don't think that he is going to have any sort of big master comeback, but I think he could be part of the rise of the power shift in the game and would be, you know, a factor in pushing that thing forward. But I don't like his chances of being able to be a real shining star out here. I think that he was just way too quiet in terms of the show for the first few weeks.
I thought it was interesting on the episode the other night, we didn't really see Nick and Michelle talk to each other. We saw the other two pairs
right. Have
moments of like, okay, here's what we're doing and here's what's going on. But we only saw Nick talking with Jason. And we discussed on the podcast, I think it was with Angie, we got into what was the read on that conversation. Did you feel like Jason was being on the level with Nick when he was talking about how he likes him and he'd like to work with him?
I think so, in the sense that Jason's keeping his options open. I think that he's authentically telling Nick, like, yeah, man, this could be good. You know, we could figure that out. That might work out. And he might mean it until he has to make a call. I think that, you know, as far as Jason and Sydney go, they don't have to lock into one decision until they really have to, which would be a tribal council situation, whether that's still in the tribal phase or as you're heading into Emerge. So I think for Jason, my guess would be that he's being authentic with Nick as far as keeping the option open. Whether or not it's his preferred option, we have to see a little bit more of the story unfold.
And then what about the pair of Aubrey and Joe? Do you like that pair moving forward?
I have to say, I was so impressed with Aubrey this week. I really loved Aubrey this week. And it was a subtle thing, but it was when she was ninja talking. Did you catch this?
Ninja talking?
Yeah, she's doing some ninja talk where she has her buff over her mouth. I mean, I guess like you could say it's like the baseball thing where like the pitcher and the catcher are talking and they have like their gloves up to their faces so nobody can see what
they're
saying.
You knew about that?
I've seen a little bit of baseball here and there. I'm going to a fantasy baseball draft tomorrow night.
Okay.
I'm the taco of the league. But yeah, so it's like, it's that thing where like she was wearing her buff like a ninja mask and she was just like talking through it so no one could read her lips. No one knows what she's saying and she's just talking to Joe that way. And I'm sure it's not really, really a thing, but I just thought it was great. And it reminded me of like the Jeremy Collins story from Second Chance that Fishback talked about. And other people have said that Jeremy's like, don't shake my hand. Never shake my hand. Just like give nobody any physical sign of anything. So I liked that. I thought that was cool. But I just really liked Aubrey this week. I liked the way that she talked about the game. I liked the way that she assessed Peter. I liked her instinct to go after Ty Trang and at least be like, yeah, I know we love Ty and he's a great guy and he is our main provider, but maybe let's cut a threat now. I just liked her willingness at least to go there. So yeah, I'm really in on Aubrey. I think Aubrey's great. I think that she's a smart player. I wish that she was more of a character. She's not much of a character right now, but at least in terms of her ability to play the game, she is she was pretty good this week. I liked her a lot.
Yeah, I think that she's in a pretty good spot. And I talked about on the podcast this week that I think she's about one vote away from being in this thing for a really long time. And I don't think she's in very much danger of going home this week. So I think that once they get to the merge, I don't see her being somebody that's going to be a target. And I think that she's somebody who is somebody who hopefully is, you know, starting to think more and more strategically, whereas Liz had knocked her on that earlier in the season. It's not that not being something that she wanted to do. And again, maybe she was just not wanting to talk too much with Liz about strategy. We'll see where it goes. But what about Joe? Because Joe is somebody who, even this week, he didn't have a ton of airtime. I find myself having a really hard read on Joe.
Yeah, I feel really bad about what I said earlier about Joe. That was a really
you might be right about that. Yeah. I just feel like
I just feel bad. I didn't need to be so negative. Didn't need to be such a negative Nancy about Joe. But the truth is that I'm just not getting a lot from Joe either. You know, I was really high on Joe going into the season. I love the idea of a 72-year-old ex-FBI agent playing Survivor. That's really incredibly cool. He's just not giving us anything, and he's really defaulting to Aubrey a lot. And if it's true, if Anna is correct, and in her exit interview, Anna said, Joe came to me and said, yeah, Peter's on the outs. Like, that's a bad thing to say to Anna. Don't say that to Anna. You don't need to say that. You don't need to give that information up. So I'm not loving how he's playing. He's very, you know, he's a solid, sturdy guy, but he's just not really showing a ton, other than the fact that it is really impressive that a 72-year-old man is hanging out in the harshest conditions of Survivor that we've ever seen.
And he really dislikes Peter as well, and it looks like from what we saw in the preview that they're going to continue to get into it this week.
And that's another reason for me to like maybe think about getting rid of Dr. Pete, because if you don't like him and if you don't trust him and if you can foster some trust and some loyalty with Scott and Ty and maybe Julia, if you pull her in, maybe it's time to create a new family. Maybe it's time to stop thinking so much about the old brains.
To me, I can certainly understand why that Joe would say, hey, let's get rid of Peter, but I just feel like that would still be a tactical mistake. And I understand what you're saying about how, well, we would go into the merge and we will be down. We won't have as many numbers and people won't come after us as much. And that might be the case, but it seems to me that if they do make that decision, it would be one made out of emotion and one made out of, we just don't like him. He seems like, he's real. He's so arrogant and cocky. Let's just vote him out. And I feel like that isn't how you should be making these decisions when this comes down to such a crucial point in the game.
Yeah, I don't know. You know me, I'm controversial.
Yes.
Very controversial man.
It's typical Wiggler. Very controversial.
Very, very controversial. I'm probably wildly wrong, but maybe I'm not. I think it's at least an idea that's worth considering.
All right, well, we'll get to talk about it at all this week, and then we won't even have to wait for the Wiggle Room to talk it through, because you'll be with me on the Know-It-Alls this week.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. The return of the original power duo of the Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yeah.
The dream team is back.
I'm going to feel like Jason. I'm like, oh, who do I want to share my idol with next week?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like going to be an on-time punctual Survivor Know-It-Alls, I assume. So that'll be great.
Are you more the Ty Trang or the Neil Gottlieb?
Oh, man.
Hold on, wait. I have to be Jason.
You're Jason.
No, you're Jason.
You're the one.
Don't get me in trouble here.
You're the one with the big gauges in his ears. You have the gigantic earbuds that you're always wearing.
No, I have zero earbuds.
Yeah, zero earbuds. Well, I like ice cream, so I think that leaves Fishback as Ty.
Okay. Well, he's very lovable.
I think so. I think so. Hey, do you want to hear something cool?
Oh, yeah. What do you got?
So I was in L.A. last week, which was really fun. I was in California, had a really great time. But I was bummed because, as you know, Anna Kate is Brooklyn-based poker player. And she had a huge going away party, like a huge exit episode party. It was like a gigantic rave in Sheepshead Bay, which I normally wouldn't go to because it's far from where I live. But I would have gone for the Anna Kate party. And I had the invite and I just couldn't go. So that was real disappointing. But I got butt dialed by a friend who went, Survivor veteran, but I don't want to identify this person because they didn't mean to do it. And I don't think that I was supposed to share anything from the party here. So I'll just give the person a pseudonym. Let's call him Ron Jobert. And I got butt dialed by my buddy Ron Jobert. And I got to hear a little bit of the music that was playing at the rave, at the Anna Kate rave, if you want to cue that up.
No. hates all her days.
She's pre-journey just like Blondie.
Swapping tribes was coming on her board. Emma Hayes.
But not as bad as Aaron Grisberg.
Yeah, so the voicemail cuts there, and I texted Ron Jaubert afterwards, like, dude, you're at Anna Kate's poker party, and Wanda's there, Truck 108 is sponsoring. He's like, yeah, she came last minute. They did not intend to have her here this week, but the original singer couldn't hit those high notes, so we had to bring in Wanda.
Boy.
But don't share that with anybody on the Wiggle Room, so I'm violating this guy's trust.
Yeah. You know, Wanda, she must be really trying to get on one of these second chance seasons because, you know, you didn't
she's
hear...
She's hitching her wagon to the possible Kelly Wentworths of the world, though.
Yeah,
you know?
She's really just showing up everywhere. Every time you turn around, yeah. Wanda is at more and more of these Survivor functions.
Yeah, well, I would guess that that's probably the last we'll hear of Wanda for a little while. Again, Ron Jaubert says Wanda was there out of necessity.
Wow. Yeah,
but that's pretty cool. I was really bummed to have missed that party.
Yeah, it sounds like a good party.
Yeah,
well, the Survivor poker community, so tight.
Very tight. So tight right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard Garrett was there, puking his guts out in the back, ate way too much chicken.
Yeah.
Damn.
Chicken and vegetables, damn.
Yeah.
All right, well, yeah, we will talk about the poker community as well on the voicemails this week. Jason Somerville will be joining us.
Yes! Yeah. Oh, I love Jason Somerville. That's great.
Yeah, Jason Somerville, also a big fan of the Josh Wiggler as well.
Big fan of that guy. He's great.
Yeah.
That guy needs to be on Survivor. It's a mistake that he is not out there.
All right. Well, we will get into all of that. All right, Josh, do you have a hashtag for this week?
I mean, unless you used Menage a Trang on a different podcast.
I have not. I've never used
it. Okay. Yeah.
You know, it did come up a little bit in the Seinfeld podcast, but not the Ty Trang part of it.
I feel like that's great.
Yeah. We covered the switch on the Seinfeld podcast with myself and Akiva Winnegar. And again,
is that like a tribe swap?
Yeah, it's like a little like a tribe swap.
Good timing.
Yeah, so very, very good. All right. So, of course, you could follow Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. How was your interview with Anna Kate this week?
It was great. It was good to talk to Anna. I felt really bad for her. She like kept talking about like, oh, I disappointed my friends and my family in the poker community. It's like, Anna, you got screwed. You know, you're that person that gets screwed over in the tribe swap. It's part of Survivor. That's going to happen to somebody. But I kept trying to say, like, I think you can live with this one. I know that it's hard. I'm sure it's haunting you and stuff like that. But you were in a good spot. It's a testament to how big of a factor luck is in this game, because she had really crappy luck. If the other tribe loses, Anna is still in the game and Michelle is gone and Anna might be in a really good spot. So it was really just luck of the draw for her. I felt bad that she seemed to be pretty down about it, but other than that, you know, it was fine.
What do you think about her as a potential person to return to the show? Do you think that that would be a good fit?
Probst has said so. Probst said in his Dalton Ross interview, he said that Anna could be a second chancer. Yeah, I think that she was playing a solid game. I think that she was playing a very very sound game. There was nothing wrong with what she was doing. You know, you could pick and quibble with the way that she handled the swap, maybe. You know, does she go after Ty the way she's going? Does she go harder after Ty? But I think at least up until then, up until, you know, a real, real bad stroke of luck, I think that she was doing everything right. So if she were to come back, I'd feel... would I feel good about her? Because I feel like at least with Kelly Wentworth, you didn't know anything about Kelly Wentworth.
Right. She was more of a wild card.
That was a big part of her success. Whereas I think if Anna Kate were to return, I think that she does at least have a bit of a reputation of like, oh, well, she was doing some stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
I think that if you were going to talk about how she's going to do, I think that she would probably be hard pressed to have the same success that Kelly had, because I think that Kelly did not have the kind of target on her back that I think that Anna might. But I think that it's a good reason as to bring her back. And Angie and I discussed this for a while. Angie was not as high about bringing her back. But I do think that for somebody who is a younger woman on Survivor and an attractive younger woman, I think that she was playing very aggressive. And I don't think that you always see those traits all put together. Somebody who was willing to be a go-getter, somebody who has like a lot of different layers to the game. She did not have a ton of success in the game, But I think that the way that she's going to approach the game is more often than not going to lead to good TV.
It's the same kind of thing. Like, I would say this to you, Rob. Don't feel bad about your winner pick. Like, don't feel bad that your winner pick went home fifth. That's not something to lose sleep over. You made a solid winner pick. I think that if she hadn't been, you know, in the position she was in the tribe swap, I still feel good about her ability to push forward in the game.
All right. Well, I was beating myself up over it.
I know you were. I know you were. That's why I felt like somebody should say it on one of these podcasts. It's just like, let it be out there that, like, you did okay here, Rob.
Right. I've picked Bill Posley as a winner pick, okay? This was not one that I'm really beating myself up over.
Well, let's see if life coach Nick does any better.
All right.
And you can hear more about that joke in the Evolution of Strategy, chapter 24.
Yeah, so of course, anytime you want to check in with what Josh and I are saying about the previous 30 seasons of Survivor, you could check out the Evolution of Strategy, where the first chapter, all about Survivor Borneo, is always completely free. That's at evolutionofstrategy.com.
Yeah, and secretly, the Guatemala and Nicaragua chapters are free, too.
Yeah,
if you know the secret code word.
Right.
Knock on my door, I'll let you know.
All right. Josh, anything else you want to get out there before we part ways for the Wiggle Room this week?
No. I have to run. I have to go record a Top Chef finale podcast with Antonio Mazzaro, Mike Bloom, and Kurt Clark. And let me tell you, no spoilers, but I'm fired up.
All right. Whoa. All right.
Fire it up right now.
All right. That's good stuff. Also, of course, David Bloomberg will talk with me about why Anna lost. You could look for that on Tuesday on Robert's podcast. And then, of course, we'll get back into the whole Survivor scene this week. Stephen Fishback is out of action this week that he is traveling. So Josh Wiggler and I will be together on the Know-It-Alls. And then
reunion.
Yes, the reunion tour is on. And then, Josh, you'll be very jealous. Recap podcast with Kim Spradlin this week.
Oh, yes.
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 And voicemails with Jason Somerville. Well, it's going to be a great week.
It's a great week. Very good week. One other thing I'll plug is that we're about to start Daredevil podcasts on post-show recaps. We're going to have one podcast per every single episode of season 2 of Daredevil. And by the time you're listening to this, the first episode should be available. So go to postshowrecaps.com.
The Daredevils, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. All right.
Bring it
full circle. We're not going to top that.
Okay. All right. Have a good week, everybody. Looking forward to reading your comments on robinswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Tribe swap. Oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, ah. After the swap, the three brains and Scott. Oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, oh, way, ah. Voted out Anna, it was not cute or hot.
Hit it, Wanda.
Say goodbye, say goodbye. Goodbye to Anna, Kate's poker face.
She's pre-jury just like Blondie.
Swapping tribes was crummy luck for four.
But not as bad as Aaron Riceberger.